From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
My friends, this virus has taken a toll on all of us. Each and every resident of Illinois has experienced enormous loss of a loved one or a friend, of a tradition, of work, or of just the tiny little joys in life. Sacrifice abounds. We really do have a fighting chance now to bring this pandemic to an end. We have three incredibly effective and protective vaccines that will protect people from getting very sick, prevent them from needing to go to the hospital, and will keep people alive who would otherwise pass away from this virus. But I also want Illinoisans to know, especially those who may not yet feel confident enough to get vaccinated, that I'm not asking you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker. He took his shot this week in Springfield. We'll talk more about him getting vaccinated at the same time we're seeing a rise in cases again across the state. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel for State Week includes Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. With us today as well, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us, Mike Miletich. He's the Capitol Bureau Chief for Quincy Media, serving five TV stations. And Mike, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, Sean. Thanks.
Hannah, let me go to you. The governor was among those people getting vaccinated. He did it at a mass vaccination site in Springfield. And I guess he took the Johnson & Johnson, the one-shot vaccine. Is that correct?
That is right. We all watched him roll up his sleeve and get jabbed by a nurse who the governor had asked, and she had already done 700, so he felt pretty confident. I had heard several people in the last few weeks, kind of the State House chatter, like, why hasn't the governor gotten his yet? I think, he didn't want to be seen as jumping the line, obviously, although, plenty of other politicians have kind of excused themselves and said, I'm the head of state. I can't afford to get sick, and I'm going to go ahead and get my shot. But the governor did not. But then it got to a point where, he is technically eligible. He has underlying conditions. Why isn't he? At the end of the day, he's gotten it. He's the vaccination rates are looking, better every day. But of course, like you mentioned, we've had a little bit of an uptick here in Illinois in the last few weeks. And that is, it's worrisome. We've always talked about this race between getting the vaccine into arms and before these, more contagious COVID variants take hold. Now, the variants have not, the narrative that the variants would take over by mid-March has not actually borne out. We're not seeing that level of, rise like we're seeing in countries in Europe, but it's still a little alarming that, it's like we got to a really good place and we let our guard down, and then, it's coming back to bite us. And so it just serves as a reminder that this is far from over.
Yeah, Mike, do we have any idea why it's going up? I mean, I know that the economy is opening up a little bit more. Kids are getting together, playing some sports, maybe getting back into the classroom. All of that stuff have something to do with this?
Right. Right as Hannah said, that people are letting their guard down. You had a decent amount of people that celebrated St. Patrick's Day. Many may have celebrated spring break as well. And it does look like we're seeing a decent amount of communities that are having younger people getting COVID-19 right now. Is it the variant? No one really knows, depending on where they were across the country. But that is kind of a big concern, especially in major metro areas like Chicago, where younger people now are getting it much more often than their older residents. And I think the thing to watch here too, we would normally see average amount of cases per day in the 1,000 to 1,500 range. But this week, we saw several days with over 2,000 new and confirmed cases. So that's concerning.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts on this? I know as somebody who has pretty much sheltered in place since this all began, except for going out and getting your vaccinations, there has been this idea, and we've even talked about it on the show the last few weeks, that people, I think, are feeling some of the pressure being relieved that hey, the vaccine, the supply is going to be there, things are going to be looking up. This is a little bit of a reality check, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And the danger is if people don't continue to take the proper precautions, social distance, washing the hands, wearing the face mask, we could see what is at the moment is kind of a disturbing trend, could become a full-blown third surge, if you will, in terms of the cases. The city of Chicago, the mayor pointed out that, Mayor Lightfoot pointed out that they've had a very disturbing trend, she said. We don't see a downward trend in the short term. The cases are going up there, and the increase is among young adults ages 18 to 39 and in neighborhoods like Lincoln Park, Old Town, which are not poverty areas, but are basically well-to-do areas. And so I think, as you said, people are getting tired of having to stay home, and they're hearing, well, people are getting vaccinated. We've now vaccinated like two-thirds of the seniors, and they're the ones who would be most susceptible to COVID and dying from it. So maybe we don't have to be as careful as we were in the past. And I think that false confidence could undermine the efforts dramatically. So my message to folks, and I've had both my shots now, and I'm still not going anywhere. My message would be hunker down and hang with it for a few more months, and things should be a lot better.
But Charlie mentioned what's going on in Chicago. And Hannah, I think for downstate people, they may not be quite aware of the differences in how the vaccine rollout has happened in both Chicago and maybe in their communities. Can you walk us through what's different about Chicago?
Well, so, you know, from the beginning, when vaccines were first made available to states in mid-December, Chicago has been its own it's been responsible for its own rollout, separate from the rest of the state of Illinois. And so that has presented some challenges, I think, honestly, mostly in confusion around, you know, suburban Cook County and Chicago and, you know, I'm eligible here, but I work here, but I live here. And so in Chicago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot has not stayed the speed of the state of Illinois. And so when Illinois expanded eligibility to folks with underlying conditions in late February, the city was not, you know, quite at that pace. And now when the governor had announced his new bridge phase to phase five, which is kind of like normalcy, but we still have to wear masks, and, you know, being able to offer vaccines to everyone in Illinois beginning April 12th or 16 and over, I should say, the city's still not quite on pace with that. And then there's also this big, big mass vaccination site at the United Center in Chicago, and that's actually run by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration. And so that's caused an extra layer of confusion because it's this thing within the city of Chicago that has its own vaccine distribution program, but it's run by the federal government. And, you know, there, if listeners remember a few weeks ago, there was this big confusion several hours before vaccines were supposed to open to everyone. FEMA pulled back and they said, actually, no, it has to be. So what they've done is distribute vaccines by zip code, which seems to have gone pretty okay at that site. You know, it at least eliminates the confusion there. But, you know, when the governor said, when he announced, you know, everyone on April 12th, 16 and over, will be able to get a shot starting April 12th, or will at least be eligible, you know, a lot of his rationale was, it's just been so confusing to people, this will eliminate the confusion.
Well, Hannah, is that April 12th, I mean, that's still a couple of weeks away. Is there, there's no evidence that that's going to change, right? Like the governor might say, hey, maybe we need to start opening this up sooner and getting more people. I mean, they've got a plan in place. They're going to stick with that plan, it appears, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the April 12th, you know, everyone's eligible. I don't see that changing. We are still on track to get to this so-called bridge phase where we'll have expanded capacity limits because we'll have reached that 70% of Illinois and 65 and over metric. But, you know, when you look at the other metrics that go into that, because we have rising case positivity, that could perhaps derail us. And you know, I think after the governor had announced, okay, we're going to go into this bridge phase, and then, you know, possibly 28 days till phase five, I can see that that 28 days being stretched out longer and longer. But, you know, at least the governor can fall back on, well, it's the metrics. It's not me making this decision. It's the metrics making the decision for me.
I think another thing that we have to kind of be aware of is the fact that these variants are out there and they appear to be more transmissible than the original virus that we've been living with now for more than a year. The public health department announced 29 cases of a new variant that first was discovered in Southern California that is believed to be more transmissible. They announced that this week. And they also announced that cases of the variant that was first discovered in the United Kingdom have doubled in the past 14 days. And the state public health officials think that that's maybe helping spur an increase in COVID cases throughout Illinois. So we're really not sure with these variants, and the virus mutates all the time. And most of the mutations are harmless. Some of them are bad for the virus, but some of them are bad for us. And the belief is that the data suggests that the vaccines we're using now will be effective and safe to protect us against some of these variants, but we really don't know yet. So again, I would urge people to take precautions, wear a mask.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mike Miletich with Quincy Media. Let's turn our attention to some legislation, and this is another pillar of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. This was what's known as their Economic Opportunity Package. It made it to the governor's desk. This week, he signed that, and there were several bills in that. Mike, can you give us sort of a rundown of what this would do?
Absolutely, and there is a lot that's happening here. They had to break it into four because there's so many different topics that were put into those bills. One of the biggest ones is reinvesting in communities that have been left out for so many years. It goes back decades. These are your underserved communities that absolutely need money and need reinvestment. So making sure that there's new standards for lending by banks, credit unions, some of the non-bank mortgage lenders that can mean a lot to low-income and moderate-income communities. So the caucus members were trying to make sure that there was incentive for financial institutions to help those that most need that income. Another portion establishes a community development loan program to guarantee that small businesses and consumers can actually borrow and make sure that they can get houses that they want. A lot of times, there's been this redlining for years that has left people in a spot where they couldn't get loans. There's a commission on equity and inclusion that will look into the way that the state grants contracts for not only state agencies, but also universities, making sure that there's diversity included in that. It's always a big discussion, especially when we look into who is given those contracts and if they're given an equal shot for many minority-owned, women-owned businesses as well. One of the biggest things is capping the price of loans. The Predatory Loan Prevention Act is one that many have looked at for a few years now. Senator Jackie Collins was a leader on that. And it's going to prohibit lenders from charging more than 36% on consumer loans. That new cap could provide protections against payday loans, installment loans, and those auto title loans that many see in metro areas. People think that this is going to be a big deal, especially for many that have seen outrageous prices with these loan businesses. And another one that I can touch upon here is protecting human rights. This is critical in any job area. It's making sure that, you know, anyone that is working with a private company can get an equal wage. So they're tracking and reporting on wage data for race and gender. And that was Representative Sonia Harper, who's the new chair of the Black Caucus. She wants companies to face penalties if their owners fail to obtain equal pay certificates on an annual basis. It's going to be every 2 years from the Illinois Department of Labor. So that's going to be a big moment there. And truly, it's showing that Illinois is moving in a new direction for economic equity, because if you don't feel that you're able to succeed yourself, how are you able to benefit for your family? And how could you bring that money back to support the community? So a lot of stuff in those laws now.
And those have been signed. Now, another bill has moved to the governor's desk from the Black Caucus. It's what's known as the health care bill that they had been pushing. And Hannah, if I recall, this had come up earlier in the year, the lame duck session, but maybe they just didn't have enough time to work it all out. And here it's going now to the governor's desk. What does it do? And do we think the governor will sign this one?
Right. Oh, the governor will definitely sign this one. He issued a statement last night after it had passed, lauding it. And it's a massive piece of legislation. Now, this didn't come up during Senate debate, but it did last week during House debate. And the Republicans had, you know, thrown out some estimates for the total cost between $5 and $15 billion. Seems a little bit settled around $12 billion. But then the Democratic sponsor, Representative Camille Lilly, said, well, you know, we will implement these things, you know, based on actual funding. And then the Republicans pointed out, well, it doesn't that mean that you're making empty promises? But, you know, regardless of how it shakes out, I think that some things will definitely shake out and won't need a ton of money. For example, it would put an extended moratorium on hospital closures through the remainder of, you know, however long, much longer COVID lasts, because, you know, the optics of a hospital closing in the middle of a pandemic, you know, especially when these hospitals were closing in Black and Brown communities where, you know, those folks are being diagnosed and dying of COVID at a disproportionate rate, just, you know, obviously that spurred these lawmakers to do something. You know, other things in this bill, it would expand, you know, access to healthcare. It would create this new concept, which, you know, Republicans are not necessarily opposed to in theory, about a community healthcare worker. And it's supposed to be these people who provide wraparound services and kind of coordinate care, you know, because healthcare is not just one thing. It's many things. It's mental healthcare. It's making sure that people have, you know, adequate, you know, places to sleep at night. But, you know, it's going to take a couple of years, it sounds like, to actually dream up what this qualification looks like. You know, other things that had been in there for lame duck session but didn't end up in the final version of the bill would, the Black Caucus kind of wanted to tear down the state's entire Medicaid managed care system, which is this this concept that's, you know, kind of like what I just mentioned. In theory, you'd have wraparound services, you'd have people who manage someone's complete, you know, healthcare. But in practice, you know, folks have said that Illinois' managed care system has not lived up to that promise. And so it would have torn that whole thing down, but that's not what happened in the final version of the bill that is now going to be governor's desk.
Charlie, the Black Caucus has been around a long time, and I will always say they're listened to, and many cases they've been successful, but not like we've seen in recent months. They have been able to push through some major pieces of legislation, major change, certainly there's a renewed focus, I think, or maybe a renewed awareness out there among everyone when it comes to racial justice and equity. But your thoughts here on the type of success they've had here in just the last few months?
Well, I think they've done extraordinarily well because some of these ideas, as you suggested, have been batted around for years. And it was a concerted effort by the Black Caucus, both in the Senate and in the House. They had hearings all summer long last summer where they brought in stakeholders, they brought in interested parties, and they discussed and analyzed what provisions should be needed for the what they called their four pillars of ways to address the systemic racism in our society. And healthcare reform was the last of those. And I think part of the reason it didn't pass in the lame duck session was what Hannah mentioned, the whole question of managed care for Medicaid. And that piece was taken out in the bill that finally passed this week and that the governor will sign probably as soon as it gets to his desk. But it's a testament to the groundwork laid by many people over many years, and a fact that I think the whole Black Lives Matter movement has alerted a lot of people to the built-in inequities of the system in some of these areas, like healthcare, or like criminal justice, or like economic opportunity. And Illinois is moving forward to address them. We've got a long way to go, but I find it heartening that we've had this degree of success so far.
Well, we still don't know for sure that Governor Pritzker will run for another term, but he's sure making it seem that way. Mike, last week, actually after we finished taping this program, it was on a Friday night, the governor's campaign committee announced a pretty hefty donation, $35 million from J.B. Pritzker to his campaign fund. What has the governor had to say about that? Anything at this point?
Well, keep in mind, most people see that amount and many of us are like, whoa, that money is just going right out there. But this is just a drop in the bucket for a campaign for the governor. And many are thinking that this is showing what's to come down the road, a re-election campaign. But right now, he keeps saying that he's focused on the COVID-19 response, which understandably, that has been the main focus over the majority of his time in office since last year. So many people are curious to see when he'll officially announce, because it's kind of been put off to the side. I want you to focus on the most important thing right now, which is keeping people alive. So I don't know when that announcement will come, but everybody's going to be waiting in Springfield, I'll tell you that.
Well, Hannah, could it also be a bit of a shot across the bow, so to speak, that, hey, if there's anybody out there thinking they're going to challenge me, you know, whether it's in a primary or otherwise, here's just a taste of what I can do when it comes to funding a campaign.
I think it can be interpreted like that. And the other thing is, you know, he actually wrote the check a few days before what would be 1 year before the March 2022 primary, which I know is mind-boggling to think about. But, you know, had he wrote the check a few days later, then that would have lifted the contribution caps because of this loophole in the 2009 campaign finance reform law that says if you're a self-funder, you know, if you're running for governor, the limit is $250,000. If you're, you know, in the legislature, it's $101,000, I believe. But, you know, once you contribute more than those limits, then the caps are off for everyone. So it's kind of an interesting timing that, you know, for the next however long until he actually drops even more money into his campaign account, then, you know, he's working at this distinct advantage. That's not to say, I mean, you know, some of the other folks who are running on the Republican side, they could do the same thing. You know, they're obviously not quite as wealthy as the governor, but people can get creative in those areas. But yeah, it's definitely a, you know, this is my turf, this is my thing, and good luck to ya.
Hannah, just about a minute left here. Real quick, this morning, it was a Friday morning as we sat down to record this show, it was announced Moody's Investor Service changing its outlook on Illinois bonds from negative to stable. I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah, that is good news. A couple weeks ago, we saw Standard & Poor's and Fitch's weigh in. One of them had said, you know, we're going to keep you at negative. The other one said, we're going to move you to stable. Those predictions are always interesting. Although a lot of people, I think Charlie, yourself included, don't take a lot of stock about what these credit rating agencies say. But it's a sign that there's confidence in Illinois, at least a little bit more confidence than we had a year ago when we were in the early days, the throes of the pandemic recession.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, we've talked about portions of the Black Caucus agenda that's passed and the final piece of it, the healthcare stuff that passed this week. There was another significant bill that also passed, is on the way to the governor, which I'm pretty sure he'll sign. And that is that we've changed the electoral code to make permanent some of the changes that were adopted for the 2020 general election last November in response to COVID. One of them would be allowing election authorities to have Dropbox sites where you can submit your mail-in ballot without having to basically leave your vehicle. And it also authorizes curbside voting, where people can fill out ballots outside the polling place during early voting period and also on election day.
All right. And Mike?
So initially, I was going to discuss a press conference that was held this morning in regards to gun legislation, but there was just a major announcement from the Illinois Department of Public Health that they're seeing low demand for vaccine appointments right now in several areas. So they're actually expanding the opportunity for people to get vaccinated and allowing several communities to vaccinate any residents 16 and older, which this is a huge move. And that's going to start next week. So we just received this press release as we're doing the show right now. And I did not expect that to come through. So they're authorizing communities to begin vaccinating all residents 16 and older at their immediate discretion.
All right. And Hannah, I guess that answered a question we had earlier. Would they move these phases up? At least in some places they will. Go ahead with your note from the field.
We rarely break news on State Week. Speaking of vaccines, our colleagues at WBEZ Chicago are out with a story finding that only 27% of prison employees have taken the vaccine, which is a little disheartening because prisons have been such hot spots for COVID outbreaks. Now, in contrast, 63% of actual prisoners have gotten inoculated, and they've had that opportunity since, I believe, mid-January.
All right, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mike Miletich, the Capitol Bureau Chief for Quincy Media. Get a podcast of our show. It's at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app, and join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.